The Takeaway is supported by TechServe, offering Mac computer repairs for screen fixes, liquid damage, backup services, hard drive issues, and other problems. More information at TechServe.com.
This is The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry, broadcasting once more today from member station WBEZ Chicago, where we will get a tangible sense of how this city and Paris are connected. Later this hour, a reminder of our connected world through commerce, through culture, and through the mixing of populations. And that is largely our focus this hour. Is the movement of people escaping crisis and seeking peace and a better life also a vehicle where terrorism comes along for the ride? Passionate thoughts on both sides of that question.
It's time for us here in America to secure our borders and to keep our people safe as well from these radical evil terrorists.
When you know that some of the people that are coming from that region have the potential to be terrorists, we can't take a chance on that.
That's two out of, at last count, 25 U.S. governors, mostly Republicans, saying they are dubious of or dead set against taking in new migrants from Syria after the Paris attacks. You heard Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal and Alabama Governor Robert Bentley. We also caught up with a governor yesterday who said closing our borders now is wrong, Democrat Jack Markell from Delaware.
We are a land of immigrants. So I just think we can be true to our values and we can keep people safe at the same time. And I think the idea that we're just going to reject people from coming in when so many of these people, I mean, the overwhelming majority of these people, all they want is they want to raise their children in peace.
When I hear folks say that, well, maybe we should just admit the Christians, but not the Muslims. When I hear political leaders suggesting that there would be a religious test for which person who's fleeing from a war-torn country is admitted, when some of those folks themselves come from families who benefited from protection when they were fleeing political persecution? That's shameful. That's not American. That's not who we are.
Are President Obama and Governor Markell right on this issue, or are Bobby Jindal and the Republican governors right? Remember, the Statue of Liberty symbolizes the millions of immigrants who have come to our shores, mostly European immigrants. That is us as Americans. But there have also been laws banning Africans and Asians, laws not changed until 1965. There was a hesitation to take in Jewish refugees in the 20th century that resulted in their deaths in the Holocaust. The internment of Japanese people for no reason other than their race, something upheld by the Supreme Court in Korematsu versus the United States. The persecution of non-Christian Native Americans in the Trail of Tears. The casting of the Vietnamese as having no respect for human life, as General William Westmoreland did during the Vietnam War. This is also us. And this tension will play out in the coming weeks, and on this program, we hope you register your thoughts on who we actually are as Americans. You can reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. But we turn this hour first to the ongoing investigation into the origin of the attacks last Friday. Police throughout Europe have centered their attention now on Belgium, with at least two attackers in Paris with direct connections to that country. What is the Belgian connection to this attack and other radicalization rooted in Syria over the past few years? Joining us is Nils Duquet, researcher at the Flemish Peace Institute. What is the Belgian connection, Nils?
All the recent attacks in France are somehow connected to Belgium, to Brussels. Often it's about the weapons which are being acquired here and being used abroad.
And is there a tradition of radicalism centered in Belgium? Is this a recent occurrence? What about this neighborhood of Molenbeek?
Well, we've had some extremists here for a couple of years now, but there's been a lot of concern lately about young men going to Syria to fight, and there was growing concern that these guys might be coming back to plan some attacks here.
Can you tell me about the notion that Belgium has become an arms trade center in Northern Europe?
Wherever you find heavy criminality, you find illegal guns. These two are very closely connected. So you will find illegal guns in Paris, in Marseille, but also in Brussels. What makes Belgium special, however, are a couple of elements. The first one is the fact that we have a very long history of firearms production and legal possession of these firearms. Until 2006, it was rather easy to acquire weapons legally, which meant that not just people from Belgium, but also people from our neighboring countries came to Belgium to buy weapons here, including criminals. So that way, Belgium sort of got a reputation in the criminal environment that it was a good place to get weapons. And now in 2006, the legislation changed and it became much more difficult to acquire weapons. But this reputation has remained. It's still a place where if you have the right networks into the criminal world, you can get your hands on different types of guns, going from pistols and revolvers, but also automatic rifles such as Kalashnikovs.
The fugitive Salah Abdeslam, who was believed to be the eighth attacker in the Paris attacks, his brother, Mohamed Abdeslam, spoke with reporters in Molenbeek on November 16th. Listen.
I am indeed the brother of those who took part in the attack, but I have not been involved in any way with what happened on Friday the 13th in Paris. I cannot tell you why, I cannot tell you how. We are an open-minded family. We never had any problem with justice.
Is that a believable statement?
Well, it's difficult to say. We know that his brother was one of the suicide terrorists, and the other one is still a fugitive right now. Molenbeek is a place where a lot of young people have certain sympathies for what's going on in Syria and certain terrorist organizations. What we know now is that there are different parts in Belgium where these young people can come from. For example, in the days after the Charlie Hebdo attack, there was a firefight between the police and some terrorists in Verviers, in a very small town in the southern part of Belgium. But these guys apparently were up to a similar kind of attack, trying to attack police officers in Belgium.
Finally, what's the good of these watch lists? And if you make it to Belgium, is it pretty much impossible to prevent you from getting into France if you have the right documents?
No, there are no borders anymore between the European member states, which are part of Schengen, which means that if you go from Brussels to Paris, there is no border control. Well, they just started them again this weekend, but normally there's no border control. So it's very difficult if everybody keeps their own watch lists and everybody is doing their own business. So what I think we need to learn from this is that we need to cooperate much more in Europe. Police forces, intelligence forces have to cooperate, share information, set up joint operations even more than they do today, because this is not a typical Belgian problem. This is a problem that we have everywhere in Europe. And the fact that there are no boundaries makes it much easier for these people with bad intentions to actually do what they want to do. If you want to plan an attack and you want to do it in Paris, it's a pretty smart choice to do it from Belgium, for example, because it means that French intelligence and French police forces will not be able to survey you as good as they would if you would live in Paris. So criminals and terrorists are using the national boundaries. So I think it's time for us to get over that and to cooperate much more and set up a real European police force.
Nils Duquet is a researcher at the Flemish Peace Institute. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Are migrants from the Middle East a pathway for radicals headed for attacks in Europe and elsewhere? A Syrian passport found on the pavement next to a gunman in Friday's attacks in Paris suggests that the answer may be yes. The passport had been stamped through the Greek island of Leros. Greece is a common first country for migrants and refugees from Syria, with thousands arriving daily. Gene Karstensen has been reporting from the island of Lesbos for weeks with support from the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting. She joins me now. Welcome, Gene.
Hello, John.
So is the migrant influx being investigated as a vector for insurgency? Has this been thought of all along, or is this a revelation that has just come from the Paris attacks?
Well, I don't think it's exactly a revelation, but imagine how complicated it is when you have a border like the Aegean Sea border here in Greece, and you have hundreds of thousands of people arriving just in a matter of months. So the Greek government and the European Union, quite honestly, has been playing catch up for the last months, trying to figure out how to process this number of people, and they don't arrive in airplanes. They arrive whenever they want to, courtesy of the Turkish mafia. So it's quite a complicated situation.
Has this suddenly put a sense of insecurity among all the people on the street, both in Greece and the migrants who are temporarily or permanently planning to settle?
You know, I think it's going to take a little bit of time. Here on Lesbos, it's a life-saving operation every day. Often they arrive in bad weather, they're cold, there are drownings. So it's sort of a daily battle to keep these people safe and just move them through the island. And I would also say that the refugees arrive here, the refugees and migrants, they arrive here with a lot of hope after that sea crossing. So I don't think they want to vocalize too much about their fears about what the Paris attacks may mean, changes of policy and difficulties for them in getting asylum.
Does it mean there's a greater police presence as part of the humanitarian effort, or is the focus on the humanitarian effort still solid as far as you can tell?
You know, I don't think there's been any change in police presence in the camps here. It's a struggle just to get more staff here to handle the registration. One of the problems on the island is the registration does not move fast enough and people start backing up. This is an island with a population of about 89,000 and the capital city is about 35,000. Now, if you get 20, 25,000 migrants backed up on the island, it's quite a difficult situation. So keeping the registration going and getting people moving on is a big job and very important, and more money and staff is still needed just to do that.
We should remind people that not all of the refugees and migrants are from Syria. Here's a young woman, Narges, 18, from Afghanistan, who spent a little time in a refugee camp on Lesbos. Listen to her sense of insecurity after the Paris attacks.
We are not terrorism. We are human. And we ask them to open the doors for living because we are not a very good life in the Afghanistan. Especially in Kabul, they said it's good for a living, but not good. You said in Paris, it's for one night in a year or in 10 years. But every night in the Kabul, in the Afghanistan, bomb.
Is that a common sentiment, Jean?
It is a common sentiment. People, of course, are very upset about what happened in Paris, but I've talked to several refugees who do point out that as upsetting as it is, that kind of violence is something that is part of their daily lives. And I think that's true for people in Afghanistan, certainly true for people in Syria, true for people in Iraq. People express terrible grief over what happened, but they also try and put it in perspective.
Which is precisely what President Obama said. They are fleeing the same kind of terrorism that terrified the people in Paris over the weekend. How has this entire crisis changed since you've been there?
Well, it's evolving for sure. On this island, they've had to create an infrastructure of reception camps and transportation to deal with these huge numbers of people. I think now there's a sense that if more resources don't come in here to support this island, we could end up seeing some tensions here on the island if refugees end up staying here, if this becomes more of a detention center or you get semi-permanent residents here among this refugee population if they can't move north. I think it could become quite difficult on the island with a lot more tensions than we've seen so far.
Jean Carstensen has been reporting from Greece with support from the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting. Thanks so much, Jean.
Thank you, John.
The so-called Schengen Doctrine that keeps the borders in Europe as open as a drive between Texas and Oklahoma may be suffering a mortal blow from the Paris attacks. Politicians long suspicious of the open borders policy, fearful of refugees in general, and particularly streams of immigrants from the Middle East, are now speaking openly of checkpoints and expulsions. Far-right French nationalist Marie Le Pen said Sunday that France has to clamp down on Islamist fundamentalism, shut down mosques, and expel dangerous foreigners and illegal migrants. Yasser Louati is a spokesperson for the Collective Against Islamophobia in France. Yasser, is this gaining momentum?
The whole political spectrum in France is following the narrative from Marine Le Pen, because she set the tone at 3 p.m. after the attacks. I mean, Marine Le Pen won the ideological battle. We may be fighting the political party called the Front National, but the ideas are shared by almost every single political party in France, especially when it comes to dealing with minorities. All mosques are under surveillance, and not one single imam in a mosque calls for jihad. And I will quote the famous anti-terror judge, Mr. Mark Trevidic. He said it in a famous interview, and he was also supported by every single study, that radicalization does not take place in mosques, and religion does not fuel radicalization. It's the hatred of society. People want to seek revenge for their personal grievances. So when Marine Le Pen targets mosques, this is complete nonsense. Now what the government needs to know is to have more efficient secret services. How come in this attack, all the suspects, all of them, just like in January attacks, they were already on a watch list? The government knew about their whereabouts. We keep repeating the same mistakes we did in the 90s. We clamped down on religious freedom. We clamped down on the freedom of expression of imams. We don't give them the means to properly provide religious education to our youth. And then we get surprised when these like, you know, weakest links get, you know, caught in the middle of, you know, clandestine circles.
But if these individuals are being radicalized inside of France, and then you have an attack like this, I mean, you have to admit that Marine Le Pen has a political point.
Look at the profiles. They all went abroad and came back. If these individuals are on a watch list, how come we don't act upstream and keep them from doing that? Common sense raises questions. It was 8 of them, highly coordinated, heavily armed, and all ready to die. You mean to tell me nobody knew about their whereabouts? That all of a sudden they showed up and they said, oh, let's blow ourselves up in a stadium and in the heart of Paris. This is complete nonsense. We need, again, to focus on the path to radicalization. And if you take the quote from the press release made available by these terrorists, what were they saying? We are punishing you for your foreign policy. What did one of the killers say at the Bataclan concert hall? This is retribution for what François Hollande is doing in Syria. What are we doing about that? Nothing.
Do you think that ISIS should determine Hollande's foreign policy?
No, they should not. But for right now, our war on terror is a complete disaster. We keep adding fields of combat throughout the world, and we keep receiving more attacks in return. We cannot solve this 14-year failure through, you know, communication campaigns and clamp down on individual freedoms. It takes long-range strategies. And unfortunately, our politicians are more worried about their re-election than about our own security as citizens. They are doing exactly what failed under the Jacques Chirac administration.
Yasser, do you believe in 10 years that there will be no open borders in Europe, and that the notions of checkpoints and closed borders will be a general policy throughout the continent and not just in the offices of Marine Le Pen?
I don't think, you know, it will lead to that. I think the European Union is highly criticized for its policies, for its shady ways of making decisions and imposing their decisions upon us. But I don't think Europe will backtrack and all of a sudden shut down borders. Right now, we are in a state of emergency, which allows the government to shut down the borders. But on the long term, if France goes down that path, we will be the ultimate losers. Because France cannot compete on its own. It needs Europe just as much as Europe needs France. And we should not, like, you know, take seriously these, I mean, like, do Americans take seriously the propositions made by Donald Trump? They make the buzz. We speak about them. It's funny, fine, it's outrageous, but that's it. The decisions made available by Marine Le Pen are completely out of touch with reality. And unfortunately, the government is falling into two traps. The trap set up by the terrorists, by showing them a divided country, a scared country, backtracking on its fundamental beliefs that human beings should be free and should not lose their individual rights, and at the same time targeting the Muslim minority, making it, you know, hold responsibility. And we even add a third one, following after, you know, irresponsible leaders. Marine Le Pen inherited a political party. She never managed a single thing in her life. She never managed a business, let alone a country. How can she be in a position to impose a political agenda upon us?
Yasser, since you mentioned Donald Trump, do you believe that Islamophobia is growing not only in Europe, but in North America and the United States as well?
Yes, definitely. Muslims have been abroad for generations. We have, you know, I work with families here in Paris. They are the fourth generation of French Muslims. Four. And they are still perceived as the eternal other, the eternal foreigner. The same thing in the U.S. I went to school in the U.S. and unfortunately, I keep speaking with my friends. They are still portrayed as foreigners. So once you have this eternal other, it becomes legitimate for people to start saying, oh, well, he's not one of us, so therefore he deserves a special treatment. So yes, Islamophobia is increasing, but we are doing nothing about it.
Yasser Louati is a spokesperson for the Collective Against Islamophobia in France. Yasser, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir.
Was, in fact, a bomb aboard a Russian plane traveling from the Sinai Peninsula the first shot in the latest offensive from ISIS that now includes attacks in Beirut against Hezbollah-controlled territory and the Paris attacks last Friday? Russian authorities now say that they have confirmed an improvised explosive device caused the downing of the jet last month, killing all 224 people aboard. Joining us is Kimberly Martin, professor of political science at Columbia University's Barnard College. Kimberly, why the delay in announcing this, and does this suddenly bring Russia into this battle against ISIS in a way that they weren't necessarily allied with the U.S. and France before?
Well, John, you know, it's very hard to know what causes Russia to make any particular decision at the moment because they don't have any institutions that are behind policymaking. So it's all Putin and his close friends that are making the decisions and announcing things. But a couple things to keep in mind. The first thing is that what has been announced by Russia is that it was a bomb, not that they agree that necessarily it was a bomb that was used by the Islamic State. And I think that's really important to keep in mind when we are talking about it as well, because the bomb on the plane was very different from the other attacks. It was incredibly precisely targeted. It hit a plane that went down in the middle of the desert, so it didn't affect any Egyptians, only the people on board the plane. And the people on board the plane were almost completely Russian citizens, and those who were not Russian citizens were people who felt comfortable enough being in Russia that they were flying to a tourist destination in Egypt from Putin's hometown of St. Petersburg. And so this was really a very precisely defined attack that's very different from a suicide bombing or a mass shooting that just hits people in general. And I think that might be an indication that even if the Islamic State was involved, it wasn't just the Islamic State. And the reason that I think that is because up until this point, up until yesterday, Russia was not primarily hitting Islamic State targets in Egypt. They were hitting the targets that were more of what we've been calling the moderate rebels, people that the U.S. and the CIA and other Arab states have been supporting against the Assad regime. So something shifted, but I wouldn't necessarily guess that this means that we have certainty that it was the Islamic State that shot down the plane.
Well, let's do some hypotheticals here. This does resemble the Lockerbie bombing in the sense that it was precise. It was timed to come down in a particular location. Actually, there was some thought that the Lockerbie bombing was supposed to come down over the ocean, so it was perhaps a mistake that it came down over land. But the sharing of terrorist technology in terms of downing aircraft would suggest that if ISIS has this capability, this is a major escalation.
I think you're right. And I think that on the one hand, this makes it look like things might be getting more dangerous for the external world because the Islamic State seems now to be targeting the international community as opposed to just wanting regime change towards the caliphate in their own home territories. But on the other hand, we've gotten the first signs in the last couple of days that this might actually create a new opening for Russian cooperation with the West. And partly that's because all of a sudden yesterday, it does seem that the Russian planes and the Russian missiles are now targeting Islamic State locations inside Syria as opposed to the moderate rebels that they had been targeting earlier, which indicates that there's some cooperation with France. And also, we saw yesterday that the Russians, for the first time, talked about offering some debt relief to Ukraine, which is an indication that maybe there is some possibility for cooperation there as well.
Double-edged sword with cooperation with Putin, whose fighting of terrorism includes tactics like carpet bombing in Chechnya. Kimberly Martin is professor of political science at Columbia University's Barnard College. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
We return now to our consideration of the shockwaves being felt across the world from the Paris attacks. Jack McCord is executive director of Alliance Française de Chicago. He just returned from Paris. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
So let's talk first of all about the connection between the United States and France. It's worth reminding people of. It goes back a long way, and it's alive and well today. Alliance Française is in Chicago. It's also in New York. It's a network of organizations that bespeak a very intimate bond between these two countries.
There's an intimate bond, and you're right. It goes back a long way. It goes back, I mean, one of the people I often think of is the Marquis de Lafayette, of course, who's buried in Picpus, over whose grave the American flag still sails, and in fact, it flew over his grave during the entire German occupation, was never disturbed. Great amitié dating from 200 years ago, long-standing, particularly in the Midwest, love, respect, esteem for things French. That's the Alliance Française has been around for 120 years in Chicago.
You can see Lafayette on stage on Broadway in the show Hamilton, which is on his way to Chicago, I dare say, sometime soon. And the French folks here will get a kick out of it.
I think we will. Yeah. Yeah.
You were in Paris on Friday.
I was in Paris on Friday. I was there for a very short trip. There was sort of part business and part fun because a friend of mine was supposed to sing in an opera at the Théâtre des Champs-Élysées on Saturday, which, of course, was canceled. And we were having dinner and got into a taxi, and I heard over the radio that something was going on. And as is often the case, taxi drivers are great sources of information. So we sped back to our hotel, and I watched the rest of it sort of unfurl on television, which was just – it was just horrifying. People were sort of in shock, still in shock.
People who visited Paris feel a sense of a city that takes care of itself, a meticulous sense of keeping things looking beautiful, the sense of culture. There is a sense of segregation in Paris that is disturbing and may have borne into this crisis in some way. Did you get a sense that Paris is also vulnerable as you watched this unfold while you were there?
You put it into sort of a local American context. I think of areas in Chicago or hipster Brooklyn or Adams Morgan in D.C., for instance. I mean,
yes.
if basically a few black cars were to pull up and some young guys dressed all in black, hooded and with firearms would simply open fire, it's that sort of vulnerability. I mean, how in the world do you control that?
Wow.
That's what makes it so horrifying. And it was clear that they targeted a young population that was you know already open-minded, as many young French people are, and it was it's seemingly random, but obviously it was meticulously planned. And it's just the horror of it's like storming, you know, a crowded music venue and just opening fire and summarily executing people as you go. It's just sort of muddles the mind. I mean, everyone was in shock. It was numb. Paris was numb on Saturday.
Yeah, I was on Michigan Avenue here in Chicago on Sunday, and there was a sense of vulnerability and outrage among people that I spoke to. And in the course of 25 minutes, I spoke to a couple of people from Chicago, two people from Paris. There was someone from Colombia, someone from Puerto Rico, the French individual, one of the French individuals that I spoke with, became suddenly friends with one of the people from Chicago I was speaking to. What were your responses to the Charlie Hebdo attacks earlier this year, as well as your response to these attacks over the weekend?
You mean my personal
Alliance Française?
The Alliance Française. Well, actually, what happened with Charlie Hebdo? It was interesting. It happened at an hour that would have corresponded roughly to an early arrival hour at our offices. And I noticed that my French colleagues, the heads of the school, were wearing very long faces. And they said, have you seen the news? And I hadn't yet, as I hadn't gotten on TV5. I didn't know what had happened. So we sort of were reeling from that news. And what happened in very quick order is that we put together a vigil at the Alliance because it was bitter cold outside in Chicago. And that happened that very evening. And about 100 and between 150 and 200 people showed up. The French consul spoke, and we basically, it provides a, you know, people want to go to a place. I mean, closure, it's too early for closure, but you want to be able to sort of come to terms with it. And I think it helps if you do that with other people. And so we were happy to serve as the place to do that. In this case, the gatherings were on the plaza in front of the French consulate, which I think is which we helped organize and certainly publicize. And I think it also allowed for more people to go because our capacity is about 300, and they were substantially more than that at the plazas on Michigan Avenue.
And the weather cooperated. It was a beautiful weekend.
Many Novembers in Chicago, the weather did cooperate, yes.
Well, you can see the response in Chicago. You can just see photos of the vigil led by the Alliance Française de Chicago. Just go to our website, thetakeaway.org, and you can see the outpouring. And we could have a photo album from all around the United States because there are French communities all around the United States. What is the discussion amongst you and your peers about the issue of refugees and the issue of borders closing, all the issues that we've talked about on the program today, borders closing in Europe, saying no to migrants from the Middle East here in the United States?
Well, I think we actually haven't talked about it in depth because we're number one, just frankly, being interviewed by a lot of people from the media because we're the Alliance Française of Chicago. And it's often very difficult for the consuls to have the consulates to have the ability to speak because there has to be a central message sent from France and then from the ambassador, and then the consulates are authorized to make statements. So we're often asked first. I think the key thing here is that it's, first of all, it's very easy for a marginalized youth from the suburbs of whichever large city to get on a bus in Paris and to get to Turkey with no border controls until they get there. And then they can sneak into Syria. And one way or another, once they're back in the Schengen Agreement, there's free passage.
We should remind people the Schengen Agreement permits that free movement. Around
free passage among essentially continental Europe. And whether or not that a state of emergency allows one of the EU members to rescind that agreement. I mean, it hasn't happened so far. It's going to be very difficult to enforce because a lot of the resources that used to watch the borders have now been deployed elsewhere because the Schengen Agreement has been in place for a number of years. And also, you get on, TGV trains that go from Chicago from Paris to Geneva, and there is no border control much.
So before we go, any music you're thinking of? Any music to evoke how you're feeling about Paris, the thoughts post this tragedy?
Well, I think the first thing that would come to mind is I wish the opera performance set for Saturday with my friend singing Zelmira by Rossini had gone on, because I think it would have been one hell of a performance, and music is what's going to save us. It's that sort of cultural thing. But in a more popular vein,
and
perhaps,
French.
Yes. It would be nice if it were in French rather than Italian. But in French, I would say Jacques Brel's Quand on a que l'amour, When We Only Have Love. Because if you listen to those lyrics closely, it's pretty amazing. And it has a lot of applicability to where we are today.
Well, that officially makes you a DJ here on the program. Jack, thanks so much.
Merci.
Jack McCord is Executive Director of the Alliance Française de Chicago.
Quand on a que l'amour à s'offrir en partage.
And let's listen to Jacques Brel and contemplate what kind of a nation we are regarding people fleeing conflict. Do we welcome refugees as a rule, or do the attacks in Paris have us defaulting to other impulses from our history, impulses to close borders and keep people out?
Hi, I'm Maddie McGuire. I'm calling from Little Rock, Arkansas. I just heard of the radio that our governor, Asa Hutchinson, has declined to accept any Syrian refugees. I think that we ought to, at the very least, accept children.
We always want to hear from you, of course. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or leave us a comment at thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry, broadcasting from WBEZ, Chicago Public Media. This is The Takeaway.